It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Monday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber, who is back. We are set for some record highs at the open on the back of that strong jobs number from Friday, 916,000 broad-based gains. Couple that with a higher pace of vaccines, some more reopening news from movies to Vegas to restaurants. Our roadmap's going to begin with the economic boost to stocks. Futures are pointing to a sharply higher open following that jobs number.
Plus, global minimum corporate tax rate. Treasury Secretary Yellen set to push the policy this morning in an effort to keep companies from relocating to other countries in search of perhaps lower rates. And shares of Tesla, they're jumping this morning, this ahead of the open, after a first quarter sales surge. Carl.
Guys, it is great to be back. The three of us, David, you've been on spring break. I've been on spring break. Jim had a break a couple of weeks ago. And David, all of that's kind of being reflected in the numbers we're getting out of Vegas, out of air travel, out of open table restaurant seatings. I mean, the economic reopening appears to be very much on track.
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know, anecdotally, I think many of us can report the airlines were full during travel, barely a seat on the flights that I was on available. We know the news from Delta this weekend in terms of not even having enough personnel to service what they needed to, opening the middle seat sooner than they'd anticipated in order to just deal with, Jim, how many people they had coming. And this morning in talking to a handful of people I usually call, travel does seem to be something a lot of them are thinking about when it comes to even Trip and Carvana and what it's going to mean for Hertz as it emerges from bankruptcy, sort of that whole travel play and reopening play.
Look, it's the roaring 20s when it comes to that. And when you add in the jobs number on Friday, which was not an inflation number, by the way, you can see people are feeling bullish. And you get 100 million vaccinations, at least part of it. You really start thinking, what am I doing? Why shouldn't my life change? Why shouldn't it revert to going somewhere? And Carl, I find the money that has been added up, that is sitting on the balance sheet of many Americans, is ready to be spent. Obviously, there's still so many people who are unemployed. But, Carl, those who have money, they're traveling. And one of the reasons why I think the airlines really must have doubted the vaccines, because they're all short-staffed. They're short planes. And I look at Southwest. Why'd they have to buy all those planes? Well, because they really underestimated travel, Carl. They just didn't understand how much we want to go somewhere.
Yeah, they were. I mean, they were clear that the range of potential outcomes this spring was pretty wide. But you're right. Delta had to cancel a number of flights over the weekend because short on staff. We did hit 4 million vaccinations, David, in a single day over the weekend. Gottlieb thinks we're going to hit 5 million in a day sometime in the next couple of weeks. New York City goes to everyone over 16 years of age as of tomorrow. And then we got some upgrades this morning, David, the likes of AMC, based on some of these box office numbers regarding Godzilla versus Kong, and some upgrades of Vegas, too, where I hear anecdotally the line out the door, if you were at Caesars over the weekend, was pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I guess Vegas is coming back, too. Not perhaps a surprise again. And you point out the pace of vaccinations. We're averaging, what, over 3 million, having done 4. Gottlieb says we may even get to 5. You do those kinds of numbers, Jim, and you quickly get to, you know, more than 100 million people in a month. And conceivably, some level of, I don't know if we're how close, but at least herd immunity or, you know, whatever they're talking about in a number of months, perhaps even being sooner than we'd anticipated, understanding that some portion of the population is simply not going to get vaccinated. And there are still going to be concerns about people under 16, but and the concerns about the variants that are out there and what is still a stubbornly high a daily rate of infections. Nonetheless, Jim, it does appear that we are on that road that we've talked about so often and perhaps further along it than some had anticipated.
Look, I can't wait to speak to Frank Del Rio tonight. He's the CEO of Norwegian Cruise, and he's put the gauntlet down to the CDC. The CDC's, Carl, I went through the CDC's rules for cruise ships. I have no idea what they really are, but I can tell you, Frank is saying everyone's going to be vaccinated. Crew and customers. And I don't know how the CDC says no to that. So the gauntlet is July 4th. Frank just says it's time. This is for U.S. waters. And I've got to tell you, I know I would take a cruise if everybody was vaccinated. I mean, having watched that Diamond Cruise HBO, the Diamond Princess, not that much of a film that makes you want to cruise that much. But I do think that vaccinating everyone, vaccinating everyone just takes something big away. And I think Frank's right. I mean, come on. If everyone is vaccinated, when this isn't that what the point of vaccination is? Carl, if everybody is vaccinated, shouldn't we be wide open?
Yep, that's a great point. It's a really interesting letter, actually, and I can't wait to hear what Frank tells you tonight. But, yeah, they're talking about July 4th at 60% capacity. I did notice this morning, guys, that Fauci was talking to Politico and said that by late fall, David, early winter, in Fauci's view, you could be talking about a situation in which you go to a crowded movie theater without a mask, which is sort of right. And that's sort of where we all wanted to end up, right?
Oh, man, I hope so. I mean, and, you know, somebody who I know you're an enthusiastic supporter of Broadway in New York City, which is such an important component of the overall economy there. You can't really open a lot of these theaters in that way at 30% or 40%. You need to get to a point where you can actually have everybody in a seat. So that is, would be very good news. And I could even imagine wanting to go to a movie under that circumstances, even if people are answering their phones during the movie, Jim, as they tend to want to do these days for some reason. You know, listen, and schools fully reopening. Let's hope we get there. At this point, though, Jim, people still walk around the streets of New York outside with masks on. And if you don't have one on, they give you a dirty look.
Sure.
So, you know, coming from that to where you're going to be in a crowded movie theater without people wearing masks, I still find hard to imagine. Well, but I hope it comes soon.
Remember the big analyst meeting Disney? They were talking about 2022 and everyone was really excited about 2022. No mask. I thought it was a little strange. I tried to get Dr. Fauci involved with a mask competition, a nonprofit mask competition that Mark Benioff and I did for $1 million. And we picked some winners, and it was terrific. I got behind it big. And then today, yesterday, that Biden announces a $500,000 competition. Well, I mean, first of all, our competition was a lot bigger. But second, I mean, now? I mean, now? I think that. But if you listen to the Diamond Princess, and I'm not going to play a Peter Navarro role here, Carl, but when you listen to that HBO documentary, you do very specifically have Fauci say no mask. Not no mask, no mask. And I think that the confusing nature of because it was a novel illness. I don't blame anyone, Carl. It was a novel illness. Didn't know what to do. But the idea that they're just now doing a mask competition for the White House to me is, hello. I mean, we kind of did it. And got someone. But you know what? I mean, anything, I guess, that gives awareness to mass, I guess, is okay. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, your point's well taken, Jim. And he's had a lot of trouble trying to live that down in the fog of war that we were in. Certainly not the only miscalculation that's been made regarding policy. But, yeah, I'm sure he'd like to take that back. Jim, it does kind of lead us then, all this enthusiasm and the reopening, to more questions about how we're going to pay for all the stimulus that either we've put in place or want to put in place still. And that brings us to Yellen, this first major address today, in which she is expected, according to Axios and our own Steve Leisman, to call for a minimum corporate tax. How would that work? And how would it be resistant to attempts to undercut it, given countries who want to draw in business?
Well, I know that Wendell Willkie did not win the presidential election. Did not win the White House, and he was in favor of one world a long time ago. I don't know how this is done. I do know that the Republicans, holy cow, are they against this thing? You know, David, all the Republicans that have been on TV this weekend always say the same thing. We're fine with bridges. We're fine with tunnels. We're not fine, really, with anything else. I mean, I don't know. David, I mean, that bill has a lot that is not bridges and tunnels.
It's got a lot that's not bridges and tunnels. It's going to need more or less complete Democratic support. And there is some pushback from some Democrats in terms of when it comes to taxes, not reinstating the deduction for state and local income taxes above the $10,000 cap that currently exists. So it could be very tough, a tough road, even under reconciliation, Jim. That said, you want to try and figure out a way to potentially pay for it. So it's not clear to me exactly what the alternative is. But, you know, we're back where we've always seemed to be these last, I don't even know how many years now. where there is no true consensus amongst the two parties at all. And so one just simply says no. I don't know. You know, Jim, I want to come back to the broader market here, since I haven't had a chance to talk to you. Is that tech unwind rotation kind of coming to an end, in your opinion?
Well, the last 2 days.
You know, sort of trying to pick up the tone of the market this morning, that kind of came to the fore from a number of conversations.
Well, I think we'll have to see. There was a terrific article in the Wall Street Journal about the individual investor fleeing the market. And the numbers are so palpable that I don't know if the last 2 days can really change things. Obviously, Tesla's got everyone going. The analysts are suddenly in favor of multiple price target increases. Wedbush goes hold to buy, and everyone's very excited that it looks like they're going to make the number. The deliveries in excess of 800,000. And that causes just a tremendous ripple effect. Carl, there are so many EV stocks that have been crushed, including the SPACs. So you got the charging stations doing well. You got companies that are involved with batteries that are doing incredibly well just this early morning at QuantumScape. And I question, Carl, the lasting power of this, because every time that the individual investor comes back on Tesla and does other stocks that are derivatives, they tend to be disappointed. Because they want to buy Lucid, and which I think is a good-looking car. They really feel that that's going to be the future. That's a Churchill 4. But I think the problem is when you get behind these, like Fisker, you just tend to wallow. I mean, Lordstown being up, there's not a lot of good news coming down from Lordstown. The Romeo Power quarter, the pre-announcement, was as horrible as I've ever seen. So, you can get excited about these, Carl, but I think in the end, you should be excited about some of you should be excited about Boeing. You should be excited about Disney. I don't know whether this is the time to get right back into DocuSign and Zoom. As great as those companies are, Carl, if more people come to work at the central office, then that's why Cisco is going up, because they're central office. So I am a believer in the semiconductor capital equipment, Applied Material has a meeting this week. I think the semis, because there's a shortage everywhere, that makes sense. That's the intersection of tech. But otherwise, Carl, I just hope that people don't lose more money.
That's an interesting thought, Jim and David. It kind of reminds me, CNBC had a pretty good look at a survey over the weekend of 300 CEOs and HR executives, and the overwhelming view, 70% say you're going to have reentry of the workforce around Labor Day. Now, the other 30%, who knows? But after we got blog posts like last week from the likes of Amazon and Google saying we're going to have an office-centric culture that has big implications for real estate on the commercial and the residential side.
David agrees.
We will take a break and be back in a minute. As we said, futures looking pretty good here. On the heels of the jobs numbers, still a lot to get to regarding policy in the week ahead. Don't go anywhere.
Well, guys, we're about a week removed when I joined you on the phone to talk about this incredible Archegos story. Of course, the reason behind that amazing run-up we talked about virtually every day in shares of the likes of Viacom and Discovery. There were other stocks as well, Chinese-related companies, Tencent Music, a couple of others that also he owned significantly. But the reverberations from the story is still ongoing. In particular, the scrutiny it's going to put on the swap market, or the total return swaps that are offered by investment banks through their prime brokerage to family offices and hedge funds such as Archegos, and whether there's going to be a need for more transparency. It really is incredible to look at Viacom shares now up 19% for the year. Of course, they had been over 100% higher, more than that even at their height of, 101, I think, was sort of the high for the stock. They sold all that stock at 85, much of it common. And that was in part sort of the downfall there, having brought it down. Again, we didn't understand Archegos was such an enormous owner of this company stock. The New York Times reporting may have owned as much as $20 billion worth of stock, which even at its height would have represented close to 40% of the market cap. But this was unknown to those who were shorting the stock. It was unknown to those who were buying the stock. It was unknown to everybody, even to the prime brokers that had the swaps on with Archegos, because they didn't know how many other prime brokers around the street were also had the same trade on, essentially allowing Mr. Wang, to have the economic performance of Viacom stock. Why, Jim, anybody would want to own 30 or 40% of the market cap of this company, from a risk management perspective, is still a key question. We don't know the answer to it. What we do know is that Viacom has returned to levels that many would argue are more at least based on the underlying fundamentals of the company at this point, as has Discovery as well. I mean, Jim, I think, in the total return swap market, he was by far the largest single player, without a doubt.
Well, I think people have to know first that when you do those kind of off-board transactions, the commissions are amazing. So in some ways, you do want to look the other way. J.P. Morgan was not willing to look the other way, didn't want to deal with his business. Also found his character may be called into question. Remember, he had been convicted of insider trading. David, what I found amazing is that he used multiple prime brokers. So they really didn't know. None of these actually had a read on the other ones, is what I can tell, because these things were all off board. I also think owning that much stock, it reminded me, David, was he like trying to do a personal GameStop? I mean, did he see the shorts and wanted to break them?
He was trying to corner the market in Viacom. You know, it was like Viacom. The Hunt Brothers with silver. It's like, I want every share. I'm going to own every share.
Paramount
gonna
Plus?
Know.
I mean, Tony Romo?
Again, we continue to have questions here because it was so unusual. And if there was more transparency in this market where you actually knew who was behind these trades, you would have known the risk. And many of those who were shorting the stock would have had a better understanding of why it kept going up. So there is certainly a large argument to be made here, Jim. And we may see it. We know the SEC is taking a look at this, but we may see an outcome of this that there is going to be more transparency in this swap market, especially given the risk that was undertaken by the firms as well. We saw the Nomura loss of $2 billion. We don't know what the loss is going to be at Credit Suisse, but according to Bloomberg, there are some questions about their chief risk officer and whether she is going to be able to continue with that firm. So we're still seeing the fallout from this. And, of course, we haven't heard anything from the man behind it all at Archegos.
No, he did say it was a challenging court, Dip.
Yes.
Yeah, challenging.
Yeah.
Well, I got to use that word. Yeah. I mean, because I think it really captures perfectly how challenging it was. Hey, Carl, one thing that did happen, if you go back to the tape of our show, every day there was this moment where David would say, by the way, Viacom's up again. And I would be like, it was almost like it was his personal GameStop, too. I mean, David, you're like Wall Street Faber. And I just think it was that's an illusion at best. It made no sense, Carl, because we just didn't. None of the other guys are moving up that much. And as much as I love Bob Bakish, because I got this stock wrong, I do think that owning 40% in swaps is the type of thing where the government has to say, look, you've got to make these swap deals much more public. And I have market access on tonight. They don't they should be doing the swaps. Carl, there's a way to make this stuff very, very public. I remember doing some swaps when I was, I very minor league in this market. But you got gaffed typically. You knew that you had to get a big, you knew that they had to give a big VIG. If you were to be public about these things and everything had to be in market access, then I think that what would happen is this would never have happened, Carl. And this is a bit of a travesty when I think the SEC ought to say, look, swaps from now on, got to make them public. And I think, Carl, that would really change a lot because that's how you get away with this craziness.
That was exactly Senator Warren's point, Jim. Opaque derivatives, dark pools, unregulated hedge funds, a trader who wriggled out from under the claw of the SEC. We're going to see what kind of implications it has for regulation down the road, for sure. We'll take a break here, guys. Got the opening bell coming up in about 9 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Take a look at futures. We are looking for S&P all-time high at the open, as well as the Dow all-time high. We've pointed out before, April has not had a losing April since 2012. And NASDAQ, three-week high, as some mega-cap tech took a stand last week. We're back in a minute.
All right, time for a mad dash, and we'll take you right through to the opening bell, which is a little more than 2 minutes from now. Applied Materials.
Yes, you'll see that stock flying today. Why? One, because there's a huge chip shortage. But two, they have an analyst meeting April 6th tomorrow. And I think that this one it's very possible they could announce much higher earnings. I mean, David, one of the things that's happened is that you need Applied Materials, Lam Research, and KLA-Tencor more than any other companies right now. If we're going to alleviate any sort of tightness, you could say that ASMLF, too. You could say that this meeting may be defining because we don't hear other than Taiwan Semiconductor ordering $100 billion worth of equipment over the next three years. If we don't hear huge orders, then we're never going to get this thing, David, where we're going to make it so that we're going to have enough chips for cars, have enough chips for, I'm sure the next thing you're going to hear about is planes. I mean, there's just a huge number of chips going into everything, and there's just a shortage everywhere in the food chain. And it's really going to be made up by these companies. And I don't know if it's going to be able to be made up.
Jim, you've been following this very closely. It's such an important story. And by the way, when you talk about the shortage, I mean, you reference it in a way. The advent of 5G, the Internet of Things that we've talked about so often, only going to require billions and billions more chips than already exist. As you know, they go into virtually everything because you're going to be able to have whatever they go into communicate with the edge of the network in a way there's no latency, and it's going to allow for a lot more efficiency. But again, it goes to your point. Chip shortages, perhaps for quite some time.
Right. Now, people have to know that the Chinese order a lot of chips, and they were, just in case we were just in time, they ordered a ton from Taiwan. You have to, there's a major flashpoint going on, too. Don't forget, Taiwan's in the midst of a big geopolitical struggle. I had Secretary Mondo last week from the Commerce Department. They want to be able to build foundries here. Foundries take 2 years to build from scratch, and there are back orders for all the equipment. Lam Research is probably doing more than almost anyone. And then you can't get a Lam Research machine to be able to make semis. The back orders are ridiculous. So, yeah, David, this is a very key moment for the semiconductor industry and also for American industry. And it's not just cars. That's the point. I had Micron wrong this week. DRAM is now has been tight, but now flash is getting tight. So look out. This is some big squeeze that's going to last for time, long time.
Yeah, the debate will be how long, Jim. There's the opening bell and the S&P 500 at the bottom of your screen, 47, I think, will be an all-time high to get out the gate, as we expected. Same story for the Dow. Jim, you know, in terms of prices, you've been talking about chips. We all have for a while. I know last week, Kimberly-Clark, big price hike in North America. Evercore says CAT is ready to raise prices for the first time in 5 years. And some of the ISM respondents last week talked about either having to pay more to draw talent or pay more to retain talent. And I wonder if you think that has big inflationary tells for us.
Well, the one thing that I think that Jay Powell has in terms of keeping rates down was that the actual pay last week in that number was not as robust as I thought. But I don't know. I mean, look, I had Nucor on last week. I mean, every grade of steel is going higher. Obviously, lumber. There's still no decline in the price of lumber after that doubling. You know, David, it's very hard to realize how much of the plastics industry was really taken down by Superstorm Uri. And that's not back on. And all the prices are going through. Pulp, obviously, with Kimberly-Clark, prices going through. So we're just seeing what I think is a level of inflation of commodities we haven't seen in a long time, but not of labor. And so maybe it's maybe the Amazon potential unionizing move. I don't know, David. I just feel like that what's happened is we have short-term inflation spike. That's what Jay Powell predicted, but no inflation yet in talent across the board. In other words, we're still working on minimum wages. I don't know. David, it's not bad.
Listen,
when it comes
to... Go ahead. No, we're still working through, right? This is the first trading day, obviously, we've had since we got what were good employment numbers on Friday. Jim, you know, I want to come back on the economic front as well. That is something we've talked about oftentimes, and it was referenced in that journal story that that we talked about a bit earlier. Not clear that those checks are being spent in the way that we'd thought, at least portions of, in the stock market. Again, this new cohort, you know, it's funny sitting here where I was a year ago when the pandemic was just in its early stages and we all were in disparate places, reminds me of that moment when we started to learn of potentially a new cohort existing, Jim, but we're of investors who soon were going to be getting some checks, who then decided to, in part at least, use some of that to bet on stocks. Doesn't seem to be happening as much as we thought with the latest $1,400 checks, does it?
No, and I think you hit on the key word, David. Bet on stocks. You didn't say invest in stocks. You said bet on.
And I what did you're say bet. And I did it specifically
true.
For that reason.
Yep. Yeah, because, I mean, what happened is that there was that article this morning was so seminal, actually, because it was the numbers are staggering. The decline in Robinhood, which is coming public, the decline of traffic, the decline of people looking at it. It's almost as if, yes, it finally happened again, like in 20, you know, you're going back to 2001, they just put their statements in the drawer and said, don't worry, the companies are going to come back. Carl, the companies don't come back for the vast majority, we learned, they don't come back. And that's why if you're diversified, you're going to survive this period. I mean, remember, the S&P was up 7% in the first quarter, and yet there are people putting their statements in their drawer, not wanting to look at it. What did they own? And the answer is, I think they owned a lot of stuff that they bought very high. And yes, it is true. Snowflake is a great company, and ARK Innovation is a great fund. And we see some terrific SPACs, but that doesn't mean that their stock prices where they were bought are anywhere near here. And I think a lot of people are foolish if they think that stocks just come back. You have to work at it. I mean, you have to be. I wish we hadn't called them value stocks, but it was too boring to buy Caterpillar and buy Nucor. Carl, they wanted Flash. They wanted Fisker. They wanted Nikola. They wanted a lot of things that are charging stations. And, Carl, they may not come back as fast as people think, if at all.
It definitely takes a rethink by a lot of large institutions to pile into those names, given how many rewards growth has given you over the past decade, Jim. To that extent, though, we did get those upgrades out of Morgan Stanley of some of the Vegas names, obviously right at the heart of the reopening. Caesar and MGM, they go to overweight, 113 and 43, respectively. I did see, Jim, regarding your Robinhood comment, Goldman does add Schwab to the conviction list today, talking about strong balance sheet and, in their view, continued momentum.
Well, look, I think it's anything's possible, but the Journal piece talked about last week of March was a day that was the volume was equivalent to what happened the day after Thanksgiving and the day before Christmas. I mean, those are just complete non-volume days. I will say, David, and I think you can make a case that there are some people obviously not going to leave. And Schwab actually has good detail of who would. But some of these stocks, David, I mean, they all have that same chart. And maybe things have been really great, and maybe things will stay great, but isn't somebody other than EV not doing that well? I mean, look at those. You see Caterpillar?
Yeah, they do have similar charts. We've talked about, I mean, it's a few couple of weeks ago that we talked about the SPAC out, Jim, which continues. You know, so many of those names that had captured the imagination of the same investor base don't quite seem to be there anymore. We're also starting to see companies that went public through SPACs that have de-SPAC, so to speak, report numbers that perhaps are not being as met as well as they might want otherwise to be. You mentioned Romeo Power, for example. As we take a look at the bottom there, trading at 8:30. Remember where they do the deals at 10.
So well, that Churchill, gives you a sense. David, Churchill 4. And, right?
Churchill 4, CCIV.
On the beaches.
Love it. Yes,
and
what
the
about it?
Yeah, I mean, it went up there 50s. People bought that. And yeah. That didn't.
Although it's still trading, you know, again, I always say if it was a $10 stock moving to wherever in the 24, you'd be like very happy with it. It still performed very well. It's just that it happened to hit almost 60 on the way to 24.
Well, look, QuantumScape.
Jim.
It down 40%.
Jim,
but
it does get me, though. Yeah, it is. And it's still a large company from a market cap perspective with a lot to come. We hear from him all the time in terms of the advances that need to be made that they are making at QuantumScape in terms of that solid state battery and where that's going to end up. You know, let's not forget, so many of these things give us the projections on 25 or 26 earnings and or revenues, which is a conversation we've had and will continue to when it comes to SPACs. But I did want to get to GameStop. It's down about 12.5%. Jim, they finally took your advice. They're doing it as an at-the-market. They didn't do it as a fully underwritten deal, a la Viacom. Stock's down about 13%, but it is still up 5,878% over the last 12 months.
Well, look, I think this is – I applaud this, and I know there are people who are mad at Adam Aron – for offering something that was in the proxy, about 500 million shares. But look, these companies are using the capital markets the way they're supposed to, not the way that it's about short busting, but about making it so that they can reinvent themselves. Carl, who knows? But the people that Ryan Cohen is assembling from Amazon and from Google, they may be able to reinvent this company. They're taking advantage of what I think they obviously must think is a high price. They're dribbling it out. I mean, I think that people who are selling it here must recognize, Carl, their goal was not to bust the stock themselves, just like Adam Aron was talking about how his board was saying, look, this could be a very successful offering. We want to stay in business. They could be the last man standing. So I see GameStop as, look, I'm not calling it an opportunity, but it is only an $11 billion company. And who knows what these people could come up with. Maybe it is going to be the ultimate crypto play where you do e-gaming and you're awarded in Ethereum. David, are you chuckling?
We don't know, Jim. On AMC, I did want to ask you, because B. Riley does upgrade AMC today. Basically, their view is you had Godzilla versus Kong, which Adam mentioned to us last week. They opened with 48 million in North America. They say, given that the American theater base is only 60% open at the moment, and given that the prior film of the Godzilla franchise opened to 47 million, I don't know whether we start comparing which was the better movie and which had the better marketing, but their point is you're getting similar box office results with half of the seats available. Yeah. And that's their view, that AMC is pointing to people who want to get out of the house.
I think it's huge. And if you go and look at the corporate debt, which is something that a lot of the newer investors don't really bother with, and I'm not saying that's wrong. I mean, they go and they look at AMC and look at Adam Aron's, think it's good. But there's corporate debt, David, there's corporate debt that was trading in the 30s. That's out 3 years. Well, Adam Aron openly said, listen, we sell common stock. We can buy back that debt and it will be anti-dilutive. But David, when people talk about that, some of these newer, younger investors aren't looking at the balance sheet side and realizing how good this is. It's really good.
How good it is. But is it? I mean, I still wonder about the overall future of the company, don't you?
No.
You know, people are going back to the movie theaters, thankfully, and will do so, we hope, in even more numbers. But it wasn't as though this was lighting the world on fire before the pandemic. I mean, this is AMC.
Yeah, but David, I know they have a lot of debt, but I do think that if you're the only movie theater that gets through, I mean, you look at Darden, okay? Is Darden the only large Italian food restaurant that got through because a lot of the Italian mom and pops went under? Well, I could argue that they have scale.
I don't.
What? You don't know?
Aren't they losing money still by being wide open, you know, until people really come back? Isn't it sort of a money-losing proposition?
But what happens when you're the
Cineworld
last...
stayed closed. I mean, Carmike's finally opening. Say again?
Well, no. I mean, look, Adam Aron's goal... he's not a monopolist, but it's to be able to stay alive through this period. He came on and he said that there's been five bankruptcy scares. Five. I mean, that's incredible. When you go read the Darden conference call, they're talking about how much money they can spend versus everybody else. I mean, one of the things that's happened here is that the big got bigger. I don't know, Carl.
Darwinian. Jim, when I think about final thought quickly on AMC, when I think about the big winner here, Carl, at Silver Lake. I mean, they thought they had basically a zero on their hands, and they sold out at 12.
Right.
So
how about Wanda?
Right now, that's the only – and Wanda's the loser.
Yeah,
Wanda's biggest the loser. Owner. Tried to get out before this all hit. They're a loser. So we'll see.
Yep, they're a loser.
They're not what they appear to be. Fascinating, guys. What a tale. Guys, every sector is green except for oil. And we got the VIX once again below 18. I think we're going to head to Bob Pisani. Morning, Bob.
Morning, guys. Not a lot going on overseas. Europe, Hong Kong, Australia, China are essentially closed. But we have got a very powerful rally that's been going on really for the last 5 or 6 days. Growth has reasserted itself. We got a new high in the S&P, new high in the transports, new high in the industrials, and many sectors of the S&P also at new highs. Just take a look at some of the ones that are moving. But REITs, new highs, communication services, industrials at a new high, materials at a new high, even financials. Bank stocks, not quite a new high, but financials as a sector have popped to a new high as well. We've also got an interesting mix of new highs in the S&P 500. There's a very small group of tech stocks like Alphabet and some of the chip names like Lam Research at new highs. Home Depot curiously continues to hit new highs. A lot of people talking about that over the weekend. But what is really noticeable is the old school industrials, your Textron, your Norfolk Southerns, Eaton. These are big global industrial names that are continuing to hit new highs every day. And of course, that's important. There's the great reflation trade that we've been talking about so much. As for growth, ARK Holdings back again. We know about how difficult it was the last week and a half or so. But since then, most of Cathie Wood's big names have been back up there. Tesla's having a good day, of course, on new orders. But Zoom, Zillow, Spotify, Shopify all have had a much better situation than they were 2 weeks ago. Some of these names were 20, 30, 40% off their old highs, but they've reasserted themselves, not in any dramatic way, but certainly well above where they were the last week and a half. In terms of the tailwinds, a lot of them that are out there right now, I think important just to know where we are in terms of the overall markets right now. U.S. is the vaccine leader, and that's just the most important thing in the world right now. We've got that great jobs report. And remember, the consumer confidence number off the charts good last week as well. Rates are higher, but they're still contained. And I think that's the key to why so much of the market, we're getting so much of the growth being able to tolerate the higher rates. 2021 earnings, I keep saying, the numbers still keep going up week after week, very quietly, maybe not dramatically, but on just look at the first quarter. For January 1st, we were expecting it to be up 16% for the first quarter. Now it's up in the mid-20s. For estimates for the first quarter growth. Put up the next full screen. You'll see that's what really moves the markets here. And for the second quarter, the numbers also keep going up. We were expected to be up 45% for the second quarter on January 1st. Now we're up almost 54%. Those are huge moves up, and that's what's powering the market. You want to keep an eye on the second half of the year, of course, to see if that trend continues. The other thing that's amazing, the collapse of the VIX. Did you see this on Thursday? We dropped 2 points going into the close. We were at 19. Now we're at 17. This is back to February 2020 levels, really rather remarkable. And I think it indicates not only just less concern or overall panic, but perhaps even a little less trading volumes. I think David touched on this earlier. We had some numbers out over the weekend for March trading volumes. Very interesting. Remember, the crescendo was in January when we saw 15 billion shares a day trade in the equity markets. That's remarkable. We had 10 billion on average in 2019. Those numbers for February were a little lower than January. And now we have the March numbers, cash equity volumes, 13% below the February numbers, and equity contracts for options, which indicates, of course, a lot of interest in retail, also 13% below what the numbers were in February. So this makes a little bit of sense, Carl. We had a crescendo in January of trading activity around retail traders, and as people go back to work, the volume levels are coming down a little bit. I don't think that's surprising at all. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob. Thanks, Bob Pisani. Got some final PMIs rolling in. Let's get to Rick.
Yes, Carl, these are the final March reads. And, of course, at the top of the hour, we'll have what many consider the definitive ISM services coming out. But 60.4 replaces 60.0 on MARKIT Market Services PMI. This is a new high watermark post-COVID for this series of data points, and it equals or higher the 60 in the rearview mirror. Now, here's something interesting. As we go to the composite PMI, it moved from 59.1 mid-month to 59.7. That's important because 59.5, last month's final read, was the high watermark. So, once again, both of these are now post-COVID highs, and we're expecting a number right around 60 for ISM national number coming out soon. Let's look at the chart, shall we? If you look at an intra of 10s that started, oh, right around 7 o'clock Eastern, I picked that because right at 8:20 Eastern, the futures open, you could clearly see that we saw some buying coming in once we moved into our time zone with regard to treasuries. A one-week chart will reveal that on the 30th, last week, we had our high close. You see it on the left there. That was Tuesday at 177. The next day, Wednesday, the 31st, we had our high close, which was 174. So I'm sorry, 177 intraday, high close, 174. Why? Because Bob Pisani brought it up, and he's exactly right. Look at a five-week chart of treasuries, 10-year. And you'll see yesterday, Friday, the close at 174 was the seventh close of 70 basis points are higher, which means we really have covered this and we are sort of gun top because we haven't retraced. We haven't seen a lot lower yields, but we're not really going through that 1.75 mark. And that's psychologically important. Very quickly, euro versus dollar. Well, if you look at it since October 1st, we are turning off of 5-month lows in favor of the dollar. And finally, the dollar versus the yuan, the yuan, the Chinese currency, you could clearly see we're improving, but at a slow pace. Carl, back to you.
All right, Rick, thank you. Rick Santelli, a lot to get to, and the week's only going to get busier. S&P 40, 58, all-time high. A Dow, 33, 440, all-time high. And you got the NASDAQ, highest since March 1. We're back after a break. Take a look at some of the S&P gainers. Everything's doing well today. FANG's doing well. Facebook all-time high. But it's really the reopening stocks that are the tip of the spear. Norwegian, Carnival, Tesla in there with some Q1 deliveries. And then Vegas, of course, upgraded over at Morgan Stanley. More Squawk on the Street continues in a moment. Get to gym and stop trading.
Carl, one of my absolute favorite oil companies, actually the only recommending two, Chevron and Pioneer. Pioneer is offering 27 million shares and issuing a, well, going to spend $1 billion. Wow, it's a lot. To buy this Double Point, which is private equity and also assuming the debt. And that pressure is really hurting the stock. If you believe in oil, you want to be on that 27 million because Scott Sheffield is fantastic. And this is really high-class property. So if you like oil, you're going to get your chance, so take it. Don't run from it.
Interesting, Jim. Yeah, the oil debate is sort of there's a collision here between the reopening play and gas demand and mobility and then what OPEC Plus says right. They're going to do over the next couple of months.
Yeah, in California, drilling, and there's just going to be less drilling all over the country because of President Biden. And I really do want to emphasize, Carl, that one of the reasons why oil's up is a belief among investors that there really is going to be a major impact by President Biden in terms of the switch to wind, the switch to solar, the switch to anything renewable and what that will mean. Of course, this is gasoline we're talking about. We're not an oil-based system. But I do believe that the zeitgeist is maybe you got to sell these stocks because of President Biden. And I think that there's certain ones that are doing incredibly well. Pioneer's doing the best. You'll want to buy that offering.
And then tonight, Jim, you mentioned Norwegian. You mentioned Market Access.
Yeah, Market Access. We are going to talk about the swap market. And we got to shed a light on it. That no one, this, it's actually crazy. We had this in 2008. It's happening again. And Frank Del Rio's coming out swinging. I mean, he's not taking it. He's saying, come on, it's time. We're going to vaccinate everybody. Give us a break. And I have to tell you, I mean, if you do vaccinate everybody, then how does someone give it to someone else? I mean, to me, that's the secret of how you can change the world. But so far, the CDC has a lot of crazy rules. Remember last year when people thought it was all surface and not aerosol? Well, anyway, I think that Frank's got to do a breakthrough here. Let's see if he can prevail.
Yep, leading the S&P at the moment, Jim, up 8%. We'll see you at 6.
Very good.
Mad Money with Jim Cramer, 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.